Get energized and excited to tell the world, hey, you can call me Catholic. Live from the Christ Cathedral Campus in Garden Grove, California, EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and Orange County Catholic Radio present Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is gracious, if there is any excellence and if there is anything worthy of praise, we should think about these things. Those are the words of St. Paul, more or less. But let's not leave it at that. Let's talk about them because good deserves public affirmation. And as it happens, that is exactly what we do on Call Me Catholic. Talk about the good stuff. I am Peggy Normandin, and you have arrived at Call Me Catholic, a light and lively hour of conversation intended to affirm, explore, celebrate our Catholic identity in these modern times so you can wake up and say to the world each and every day, oh yeah, you can call me Catholic. And everybody wave to my faithful engineer and chief fact checker, Jimmy G. Everybody wave now.
Unless you're driving, two hands on the steering wheel.
It's radio. Yes. We can't see them waving. Although, Jimmy G, you know, we now have a way for our viewers, our listeners, to tune in and watch us, too. So if you are so inclined to want to see what's going on in our little studio here, you can go to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/callmecatholic. And our marvelous Matt, our call screener, is going to post a link. And you can just click on that link. It will take you back to our diocese homepage where you can watch. You can just advance the...
But wait a second. This is radio. You can't watch... What do you mean, watch radio?
Well, you can watch how dull it is here on the radio station.
No.
We're not staging for you, but you can just, you know, check in and watch our conversation.
It's
you can
the live stream.
You can see what jersey Jimmy G has on today. You can see our guest.
You gave me permission last week that I could wear a jersey today, so I thought, okay.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You never disappoint, and you never wear anything else but jerseys.
I've got a Mickey Mantle today.
No, you've got a whole wardrobe. The number of shoes I have is probably how many, and I'm counting all my old ones.
Yeah, so. Yeah, you're right. It's embarrassing.
Hey, Jimmy G and I are coming to you from high atop the Tower of Hope on the beautiful Christ Cathedral campus in Orange County, California. Now, every time I start the show, I open with those words from St. Paul to the Philippians about whatever is true and whatever is good and whatever is honorable, because I love that. That's really one of my favorite passages from Scripture, and I try to hold on to it. And as I was thinking about them the other day, it reminded me, this old song popped into my head that I think Bing Crosby made famous, and you'll see if you remember these lyrics. You gotta accentuate the positive and eliminate the negative and hold on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In Between. I think Mercer wrote those lyrics and Bing Crosby kind of made him famous. It's a cute little ditty, and I'd like to think that Johnny Mercer was inspired by St. Paul's message when he wrote those lyrics. Whatever is true, pure, lovely.
Yeah, wholesome.
Accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative. But it's a daily struggle. I mean, it's not something we can do naturally because, you know, there's lots of messages coming at us that try to draw our attention away from all that is true and honorable and pure and lovely. And we have to look for inspiration wherever we can find it. Now, certainly we find it most profoundly in Scripture, but the things that surround us day in and day out also can provide inspiration and keep our eyes on the good and the true. Things like the literature that we expose ourselves to, the entertainment, art, friends, work, and recreation. In fact, some people find deep and profound inspiration in the sport of baseball. Now, that doesn't surprise you, Jimmy G.
I love baseball. Yeah, it's certainly no secret. Yeah.
Well, it is considered by many to be the purest of team sports. Baseball is certainly not immune to the pitfalls of modern culture, but it does remain a clean and classic American game, rich in history and tradition and civilized in its play. They don't have to push anybody or hit anybody to make a score.
And here at Call Me Catholic, we are 100% steroid free.
We are
free of
steroids. Test ourselves every time
we get tested. Yeah.
I have been told. But baseball served as kind of a metaphor for life. The game speaks to something bigger than we are. And since spring training is underway, most baseball fans feel the season has already begun. Now, college basketball fans are not hearing any of this until after March, March Madness.
That's right.
And I want to give a little shout out to all our good Catholic universities out there that have made the first cut. That's Xavier, St. Mary's, Villanova, Notre Dame, and of course, A lot of people think Gonzaga is going to take it all.
Wow.
Go Zags. But we're not talking about basketball today. We're going to talk about baseball because we have our resident baseball expert. One might even say a fanatic, Father Alan Benander, in the house today. And he likes to talk baseball. Father Alan is the dean and the baseball coach for St. Michael's Abbey Prep School. That's run by the Norbertine priests here in Orange County. We are so blessed by the Norbertine priests who serve our diocese. So Father Alan is going to draw some analogies for us between spring training and our Lenten disciplines. Both get us fit for the fight.
Excellent.
He'll be with us in a minute. But first up, we're going to get to our Call Me Catholic countdown of the week, which in honor of baseball spring training season will be my top five favorite lessons we can learn about living out our faith from the game of baseball. Now, we did a similar countdown last time Father Alan was on our show during the World Series. It was just on the cusp of the World Series. And I think I did the five ways that baseball is similar to Catholicism. So this is a little different spin. This is the lessons we can learn from watching baseball that can help us live out our faith even more powerfully.
Okay.
Are you good with that?
I'm game.
Okay. Well, as in its purest form, it can teach us a lot. So here are my top five favorite lessons about living out our faith that we can learn from baseball.
The Call Me Catholic Countdown.
We should have organ music instead of the jazz ensemble.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Number five. You feel alone, but you're not alone. Now, when a player gets up to bat, he's all by himself. And it would be easy to feel that he is carrying the weight of the world, the weight of his whole team on his shoulders. But in fact, he's got coaches out there, you know, swinging him on or telling him to stay. He's got all his players cheering for him, rooting for him. And he's got all his fans out there really, really praying and hoping that he's going to perform out there. So he's not alone. And I think in our faith, sometimes we feel we're alone with our struggles, with our trials and tribulations, but we aren't alone either. And a lot of our fans are invisible. They're in the communion of saints. They're the ones that are rooting us on. They're wanting us to win. They want us to score. They want to advance us to home. And not only that, but our good church that's alive and well and very visible to us today. They're rooting for us too. So I think it's very easy to feel lonely when we step up to home plate, but we are not alone.
And especially when there's 20,000 people booing you.
Okay, I'm going to get to that. My number four is that sometimes the crowd is going to jeer at you.
Oh.
But you got to turn them off and hold your ground. Now, in 1932, there's a famous story about how Babe Ruth, during the World Series, stepped up to plate and the Chicago fans just booed him. They threw lemons at him. And he stepped off the plate. He looked up at the crowd. And then he pointed to center field.
Mm.
And he went back to the plate, and he just cracked one, soared over center field and into the grandstands. And I think it's considered still one of the longest home runs hit in Wrigley Field history.
And that ball is still flying.
So you see, you've got to stand your ground. You know, you may have a lot of naysayers out there that tell us we're silly for having the values that we have, for having the belief system that we have. Mm. But don't back down. I mean, you don't have to take them on, but you don't have to back down either.
Right.
So, okay, do what's right and don't let the critics and the culture scare you. Okay, number three. You know what? Organ music can be cool.
You mean like this?
Who knew? Yeah, so you see, we may think we're so cool that organ music is beneath us, but you get into the stands and you're cheering, right? Well, organ music does the same thing for us in church. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it helps us stay on pitch.
I feel like cheering right now.
Okay. Okay, number two is have patience. You know, games are not won quickly. You got a lot of at-bats, and sometimes you're going to strike out, but you always get another chance. Grand slam home runs are not going to happen every day for players. And grand slam home runs don't happen to us in our faith life either. You know, you do hear the occasional story of the remarkable moment of conversion for somebody where the lightning bolt hit and their life was changed forever. Mm-hmm. And that's what I would call a grand slam home run. Boy,
right.
Everything looks different. Everything is illuminated for you. But for the vast majority of us, our faith journey is one base at a time and one step at a time. And we might not ever have that lightning bolt moment, but we're still moving forward and we're still going to win the game. Okay?
I agree.
So the number one lesson that I think we can learn from baseball is that the umpires are there for a reason. Yeah. Turns out we don't always see things the way they actually are. You know, I just came from the tennis tournament at Indian Wells, and I love watching the players challenge, you know, challenge a call, a line call, and then they do the video replay and the crowd claps, and generally they're wrong. You know, it was out or it was in. And we just don't always have an objective eye. And sometimes we need umpires in our life to call us on things. We can justify things very easily through our own lens. And it takes that objective source, the church, priests, good, faithful friends. And sometimes we have to listen to their call and accept a judgment call that may not be what we like, but we have to face the truth sometimes.
They might call us out.
They might call us. I've been called out. Okay.
Or safe.
So that might be a stretch. But there you have it. My top five favorite lessons we can steal, if you will, from the sport of baseball to help us better live out our faith. You probably got some other ones. But if you think about them, if I've made you think about the analogies between baseball and faith, then I've done my job here at Call Me Catholic, and the Call Me Catholic Countdown has achieved its mission. Hey, why don't you check out our Facebook page? Join our team, actually. We're in the baseball vernacular. Facebook.com/Call Me Catholic. There's a link right there. You can click it and it'll show you a live view of our studio. Very exciting movements going
and
on.
And maybe our wonderful listeners can post photos of themselves in their favorite baseball jersey.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. That'd be kind of fun. Yeah, we'll post our stats and facts and all kinds of fun stuff. So join the team, give us a like, or you can send us an email to callmecatholic@ewtn.com. That works too. Father Alan Benander, Dean and Baseball Coach for St. Michael's Abbey Prep School and near Major Leaguer himself, is on deck to talk about how baseball can bolster our faith, or something like that. And we'd like you to join the conversation. Give us a call at 714-282-6034. Marvelous Matt will put you in the lineup. So stay with us, sports fans, because there's lots more ahead on Call Me Catholic. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Exploring the perils and blessings of embracing a Catholic identity. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Hey, kids, welcome back to Call Me Catholic Baseball Talk with your host, Peggy Normandin. That's me. Yes, today on Call Me Catholic, we are sliding into spring training with our favorite baseball expert, Father Alan Benander. Father Alan is a Norbertine priest from our local St. Michael's Abbey here in the Diocese of Orange. He is dean and baseball coach for St. Michael's Abbey Prep School right there on the Abbey grounds. Now, our Norbertine priests are a great, great blessing to our diocese. In addition to running their boys' prep school, they help out at parishes all around Orange County and are beloved for their devotion to the Catholic faith, for their traditional white flowing robes, which we always like to spot on the campus, and for their great zeal for theology. So Father Alan, turns out, also has great zeal for the sport of baseball. And, you know, we're learning that those are very compatible zeals. Father Alan, welcome to Call Me Catholic.
Thank you, Peggy. Good to be back.
Hey, so how's your baseball team doing this year?
So we had, they're doing pretty well. We had our first league game yesterday, and I was very impressed. I was very proud of our boys. They just came off a week of final exam, so I'm sure they were exhausted, but they played arguably the best game in my 3 years of coaching.
Is that
right?
They
just really did a good job. I won the game 11-3 against a pretty good opponent.
That's pretty sizable lead.
Yeah. It was a good game. We got to play that team two more times, so I'm sure it's not going to be as easy the next two.
Congratulations. Now, by the way, I want to throw out a phone number to our listeners who might want to call in and join this conversation about baseball and theology. The number is 714-282-6034. That's 714-282-6034. We have our baseball expert in the house. We got two of them because Jimmy G is something of a baseball expert too. But you don't wear the collar, sir.
He's got the Yankees jersey.
He does. I
would have worn my Indians hat, but I didn't think of it.
Which reminds me now, Father Alan. Last time you were here,
it was in the middle of the World Series.
I think the Indians were up two to one,
and then they won the game that night after our radio show and put up 3-1.
And you are a Cleveland.
I was born and raised in Cleveland. Yeah, I came out here 13 years ago, but born and raised, you know, in Cleveland, Ohio.
So you were sort of debating, you know, your heart went with the Cubbies too, because they were the suffering servant in the game.
But you really were talking
confidently about the Indians.
Yeah, well, Cleveland had just come off the Cavs victory, which for Clevelanders was just as big for Cleveland fans as the Cubs victory was for Chicago fans. Yeah, I mean, because we hadn't won anything ever in any sport. So when the Cavs won, we were like, man, and now we're about to get two. Although even when the Indians were up 3-1, I, for one, just, and it's a credit to the Cubs, I was not counting my chickens, because I saw that Cubs team and said, you know, they could easily pull off 3 wins in a row, and not to take anything away from the Cubs, these Indians were a ragtag team filled with injured players and people pitching on short rest, and anything could happen. And it did. You know, I wasn't that surprised that the Cubs pulled it off, but it was a great comeback and very historic.
It was historic. I mean, it was a dramatic comeback, even that last
game. And the Game 7 was crazy. When the Indians came back, and then the Cubs pulled it off anyway. And my brothers were actually at that game.
Oh, they were?
Yeah, my two brothers, Brian and John.
Because it was in Cleveland, right?
In Cleveland, yeah. It was a very crazy year for Cleveland. You had the Cavs, you had the Republican Convention, and you had the World Series with arguably the most historic World Series ever. And just the way that Game 7 played out, the Indians, it was bittersweet, bitter in that they ended up losing, but sweet that they put off a good comeback and made it interesting for everyone.
Yeah.
And then the Umps, in the end, the Cubs pulled off the curse is over, the that historic 108-year curse.
What do they do this year? You know, I mean, it is kind of like, okay, you're not the long shot anymore.
Yeah, well, people are talking maybe a comeback, a repeat. That's hard to do in baseball because you have such 3 rounds of playoffs, anything can happen, but it could be Indians Cubs again. Who knows? We'll see.
Well, Father, so you mentioned the fact that the Cavaliers had won, which was a big, huge comeback in basketball. Then the Cubs turned that series around, took the series. And then, of course, we saw a weird kind of comeback in the Super Bowl with the Patriots.
That's maybe the weirdest of all, actually. I mean, in terms of the improbability of it all.
I mean, we just kind of stopped watching. And then all of a sudden, my husband says, wait. You know, I was kind of rooting for Atlanta. What can we learn from these stories of comebacks? Because this is what we watch sports for, to see the big comeback.
It's the year of the comeback, that's for sure, in sports. And you can learn just never give up. Always hold on to hope. And that can definitely be applied to other areas of life. And in particular, one area of life in which I've been involved in recent weeks. And would you like me to talk about this?
I was going to say, I was hoping you would segue into this beautiful testimony that has just occurred in our community, the story of a young girl and how you have stayed at her bedside through what looked like that she wasn't going to survive. Mm-hmm. So, tell the story of Teresa.
Yeah, so Teresa Johnston, just a beautiful, wonderful, very devout Catholic girl. She's a daughter of two of our lay order members. So our community has a lay order. Mm-hmm. And two of the members
order.
Dr. Rock Johnston and Vera Johnston, very good, holy parents. And her brother, Teresa's brother's one of our students in the school, Tim. So anyway, just a very good girl. And fortunately, she suffered a very terrible accident in those storms last month. She was going out to walk dogs. She loves dogs. And she was raising money to go for a swim team because she loves to swim. And just by a quirk of, you know, whatever.
Nature.
Yeah, just a fluke. A tree blew over and fell on her. By the grace of God, didn't kill her right away.
But it crushed her pretty
good.
It
crushed her. It was many head injuries, face injuries, broken bones in her collarbone and vertebrae. It did not look good. The first 4 or 5, she was in a coma, and the first 4 or 5 days were very sad and very scary.
Really, the whole world kind of had heard about it. Even some of our listeners living in other parts of the country might have heard what a freak accident this was, that just at that moment in time on the sidewalk, that tree fell right on her.
Yeah, and to such a good girl. She's one of these girls, and I think one reason why this is very joyful, just, you know, they call her the sunshine of the neighborhood, or because it's just a smile that, you know, bright lights up the room. So people really took a liking to Teresa and had sympathy for her situation. And so, it was to the point where, you know, there's a real danger of her not surviving or if her not waking up, or even if she does, of there being serious permanent damage in one way or another, whether to her brain or her face or both. Walking, talking is all in question. So I would say the accident happened on Friday, and by the next Tuesday and Wednesday, things were getting really dire. Things didn't look, seemed getting worse, to the point where I've now heard after the fact that some of the medical staff I've heard have said during those days they didn't think she would make it. But a comeback was in the making, a more important comeback than any of those three sports comebacks we talked about. On Wednesday, one of my very good confers, Father Gregory Dick, a very good holy priest, must have been inspired by Blessed James, he said, hey, why don't we dedicate her to Blessed James Kern? Blessed James Kern is a Norbertine blessed, lived in the early 20th century, suffered a lot, was in the World War One, got shot, suffered there, offered up his sufferings for salvation of souls, particularly for the conversion of an apostate priest in his area at that time. He was from Austria and obviously a member of our order. Anyway, he's a blessed. He needed one more miracle. And so I said, that'd be great. So we got the word out.
I got the word.
Okay.
And I will say, because my heart was breaking for this, over this tragedy, even though I didn't know the little girl, but she was, she was in our community at large. And I remember thinking, okay, game on. Blessed yeah. James Kern. And I just got down on my knees and said, make this happen. Uh-huh. Make this your job right now to get to sainthood and get her back to her parents in good health. And I think a lot of people had that moment where they said, I don't know who you are, Blessed James Kern, but we're going to be tight for the next few days because we're going to pray to you.
Right. And yeah, that's, I think so. So the word spread like wildfire. Nice prayer cards were made by some friends of the Johnston family. We had a special prayer vigil at the parish of the Johnstons at St. John the Baptist, which is run by our Norbertine Confers. So, as I say, the Blessed James Kern train rolling. And a particular note, and I got to give credit to Father Gregory for pointing this out and really encouraging the family to dedicate her, Teresa, to him. And then on it was late Wednesday night, Father Gregory felt inspired to go bless her with a relic and of Blessed James. And I'm just saying, just reporting the facts. Yep. Just reporting the facts, ma'am.
Yeah, that's all. That's all we need. Yeah, we don't need to embellish him.
That's right. She was dedicated to Blessed James. Got that late night blessing on Wednesday night, the day in which was maybe the most dire day.
She was twitching, and everybody thought she had a stroke and compounded.
Just the hope was at its lowest. Yeah. Thursday, improvement began, and really, she hasn't looked back since then.
No, I mean, now she's out of CCU. She's in rehab.
She's walking, playing
the guitar or something, or just strumming
a little bit. Yeah, the ukulele. Yeah,
and so
she wants to sing. Yeah,
she has full recognition of who her family is.
Yeah. Amazing. Just amazing.
It is a miracle. Yeah. And as you and I have said, whether it will be proclaimed a medical miracle or not, we all know this was a miracle.
Yeah.
I mean, her parents probably know more.
Yeah. I mean, a miracle is a very... You know, there's a very strict criteria for a miracle. You have to say there's no natural causes. I certainly believe, and that might have happened in this case. I don't know that you'd have to talk to the doctors. But what I firmly believe is that Blessed James was hard at work and that he made this happen. And whether or not this was a miracle or he gets attributed a miracle, I think the important word for our listeners is that Blessed James, pray to Blessed James.
Pray to Blessed James.
Because, you know, he really worked an amazing
He's a man of
thing.
Action.
Yeah, and it was really neat just how it's, you know, the milestones, you know, from her being in that dire state, then just a few days later after getting blessed by the relic, her coming out of the coma, then her recognizing people, then her talking, you know, writing and the talking, now walking. It's just, it's a really beautiful thing. And I really think Blessed James was a big part of it.
You know, interestingly, too, at the beginning of the year when Jimmy G and I had our New Year's show, we both did our spiritual New Year's resolutions. And one of mine was, I don't know if you remember this, Jimmy G, but one of mine was, I'm going to pray for a miracle. It doesn't have to be my miracle or a miracle for somebody that I know, but a miracle, because I think the world needs miracles.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that was kind of like part of my New Year's resolutions.
That's great. Yeah.
Well, it's just a beautiful story. And I feel like, I want the world to know that about Blessed James Kern and about just the power of prayer, the power of community.
Yeah, because that's a good point, because it was, you had this whole, not just area wide prayer movement, but nationwide, even international wide, people from other countries due to the power of the internet and just this word getting out through various media outlets.
Yeah.
You had thousands of people from all over the world praying for Teresa and her family, and she still has a ways to go, so keep praying for her. I mean, she's in a lot of, you know, she's, it's not fun being
no,
in the condition
she's in. No, she has a hard road ahead of her,
but
some of the dangerous signs have...
And I can only imagine the impact on some of the people working there at the facility, at the hospital.
Oh, sure.
People who are complete non-believers, how this has impacted them.
Well, yeah, and we've even seen that. I mean, that's one of the fruits of, you know, the good fruits. God always brings good out of evil. And one of the things was, because we, our Norbertine community, was so closely connected to the Johnstons and Teresa, we were going to visit her and the family often at the hospital. Mm-hmm. And that allowed others to receive the sacraments who otherwise would not have. For example, one man on his deathbed received sacrament of baptism.
Wow.
So that man is now saved and in heaven because of this tragedy.
Yeah, it bears fruit, doesn't
it? Yeah. And that's just one story. There's many others.
Well, I was gratified to hear of the presence of your Norbertine priests, as busy as they are, who really made an effort to be at the bedside to give the family consolation and hope. It's just a great story. And we love these comeback stories. And I do think, getting back to trying not to trivialize it, but we love sports because we love those reversals of luck. And somebody that has all the odds against them coming up and saving the team or making a statement.
Teresa, if you want to put it in a sports analogy, Teresa, it seemed to be that she was down by 8 with 2 outs in the ninth, and she hit like 2 grand slams in a solo shot.
I told you the man's a little obsessed with baseball.
Something like that. No.
You're absolutely right, and that's what we're talking about today. We are talking about how baseball brings inspiration to our faith life. I mean, it really can. It's a great analogy and parable, if you will, for how we can live out our faith more fully. And we're going to talk more about that when we come back in just a minute. If you would like to jump into the conversation, if you have some comments to make for Father Alan about baseball and Catholicism, spring training, and Lenten disciplines, please join our conversation. Call 714-282-6034. That's 714-282-6034. There is plenty of baseball left, so don't leave the stadium. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Stay with us.
Celebrating, exploring, and restoring our Catholic identity. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Well, batter up and bless my soul. I'm Peggy Normandin. We are talking baseball today on Call Me Catholic because it's spring training and because we have our resident baseball expert in the house, Father Alan Benander. Once wrote color commentary for his hometown team, the Cleveland Indians. Isn't that kind of cool?
Nice.
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah. And this all happened. He's now dean and baseball coach at St. Michael's Boys Prep School in Orange County. Fine boarding school on the Abbey grounds. But yes, you were once a baseball, you were a baseball player yourself.
I played in
right?
college. Yeah, I wasn't quite a big leaguer, but I did play in college. And yeah, I loved the game.
Yeah.
We had a job just to kind of, it was kind of a part-time job as I was a computer programmer after my college days, but I had this part-time job of doing, the play-by-play on the internet. I had a blast with that.
Yeah, so, I bet that's really fun.
Yeah, well, my brother and one of our friends also did it, so it was kind of like a three amigo kind of operation.
So what's the thing about spring training that is so appealing to baseball fans, real baseball fans?
Well, yeah. I mean, for me, especially for any listeners growing up in a cold area region, it might have more of a significance because you're at that time of year where the snow is starting to thaw. And just the weather is communicating, okay, there's hope on the way. There's hope of warm weather.
The bulbs are bursting out of the ground a little bit.
Yeah, there's a rebirth. Mm-hmm. So for me, just growing up, just to speak from my own experience of growing up in Cleveland, it was like spring training was part of the bigger rebirth of the whole world.
Yeah.
with spring coming, renewal, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Renewal and rebirth and you have hope, you know, maybe the Indians will win more than 70 games this year because they were terrible when I was growing up.
But so during spring training, do they play a different type of game than they do during the league season?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's different players and certainly, they're going to try out a lot of more. I mean, they're not playing as intently, although you do have some guys who are going to be playing very intently because they're trying to make a team.
Yeah.
But
so there's still some qualifying going on. There's still some coaches trying to figure out what their lineup's going to be.
Yeah. It's kind of a hodgepodge. I mean, you might have the veterans maybe trying to work on things, you know, to try to hone their game. They might not be going as intently, but you have other maybe younger players who are really saying, I got to make this team.
Yeah.
I'm on my job's
okay.
on the line.
So let's draw the analogy between spring training when these players break out, they're getting ready for the season, and our Lenten disciplines. How can you compare those two?
Our Lenten disciplines, all right, we're preparing for, first, a couple things. First of all, we're preparing for Easter, the joy of Easter. So we know that if we want to enjoy the graces of Easter, we need to do our work during Lent so that the graces of Easter are more plentiful. The analogy, I would say, okay, if you want to have a good season in baseball, you're going to have to put in your work in spring training. It might be annoying, might be boring. It's sometimes not the most fun drills and exercises you have to do in spring training, but you have to do it if you want to have a successful season. I mean, that's just one simple analogy.
Well, and I also think that probably during spring training, your weaknesses are going to be more exposed. The things you need to work on are going to be more apparent to you. And I think during Lenten season, when we sort of, you know, experience certain mortifications, we're aware, this is really hard. This is really hard for me. Mm-hmm. You know, interestingly, our oldest son, who's 30 years old, lives in Portland. He was saying the other night, on St. Patrick's Day, actually, yesterday, he said, I don't know if I'm going to break down and have a Guinness today. And I said, oh, break down? He said, yeah, because I gave up drinking for Lent.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, wow, Frank, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, a 30-year-old kid, he works in advertising. I'm sure he enjoys his beer at night. And he said, yeah, you know, at first it was really awful. It was a challenge. It was like I missed it. He said, but then it became this great challenge, you know, that I'm enjoying. And so I think when we partake in those really challenging deprivations during life, we realize, well, I can strengthen myself. I can be better than be dependent on those things.
Well, that's the whole thing. I mean, we call Lent the great fast, you know, and fasting's kind of gone out of fashion, but it is what it is. In fasting and mortifications like that, they strengthen us. And then you might feel weaker physically, but they strengthen you spiritually and mentally, you could say.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's good for the spiritual life. And
we're doing this together with the baseball players.
I guess so. Yeah.
Hey, Father Alan Benander, baseball aficionado from St. Michael's Abbey. We have a relative of yours on the line.
Oh my goodness!
Your Uncle Alan. Hey,
how
Uncle
shocking.
Al. Hey, Uncle Al. Welcome to Call Me Catholic.
Oh, thank you, Katie.
Hey, Uncle Al. You're back.
Do you never get to talk to him unless he's on the radio, Uncle Al?
That's the only time I get to talk to my nephew.
That's right.
No, we see each other and talk a lot. But, you know, we are actually doing a Fantasy League baseball draft right now.
Oh, my goodness.
With my brother and nephews and 15 other guys. But we were able to get your live stream here, so we're catching a lot of this. It's really good.
Oh, hi, Uncle. We're going to wave to Uncle Al. Uncle Al.
Okay, wave. Okay. We'll do the wave over here.
We'll do the wave.
I really don't like that wave during baseball games.
I know. I'm getting tired of it, too.
Stop,
it's like,
stopthewave.com.
Stopthewave.com.
Baseball games, but hey. Anyhow, the great story. I thank you. I heard more about Teresa Johnson.
The comeback girl, I'm calling her.
Yeah.
I just like to touch on opening day. You know, opening day to me is like one of my favorite. Oh, you're waving. Hi, Peggy.
Yeah.
It's one of our favorite times of the year in the secular life. At least there's two seasons for me. There's baseball and there's non-baseball season. So.
And opening day, there's something about the smell of the grass, the white of the uniforms. It just speaks to your heart, doesn't it?
Exactly, and they fill the stadium on opening day all throughout the country. Every stadium almost sold out.
It's like a national holiday.
It is. They over here, for some reason, a misnomer a little bit, they call it Cleveland's national holiday, opening day. But, it's just a whole thing. It's a rebirth. It's a little bit like Easter Sunday on the spiritual level, so. These analogies are fun to make, the baseball and the spiritual realm. So,
well, and how will you feel opening day with the Cleveland Indians after the World Series? I mean, are you guys like, this is going to be the year? Or are you sort of thinking like, man, I wish it was last. I wish we were coming back with that trophy.
I know.
That pennant, I should say.
It's probably both, huh?
It's more, I think we're all very, very hopeful because last year we came close. It was kind of unexpected. And this year, we all feel very hopeful after last year's appearance in the World Series. And I don't even feel like talking about it too much. But anyhow, actually, based on season ticket sales, which are really up and everything, I think Cleveland is really hopeful for this season. Yeah.
All right, great. Well, thanks, Uncle Al. Do you have anything to say to Uncle Al, Father Alan?
Go Tribe.
Oh. Go Tribe.
Go Tribe. Okay.
Hey, thanks for calling. We're always going to look forward to your call when we have Father Alan on.
Thank you, Peggy.
Okay.
See you, Uncle Al.
Everybody's doing their Chief Wahoo impersonation here. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Uncle Al. God bless you. You have a fun family. You know, speaking of miracles and praying for huge turnarounds or comebacks, there's a great story about the patron saint of baseball. And I think it's kind of interesting because she was kind of named the patron saint in recent history. Now, do you know the story of St. Rita?
Okay. Oh, St. Rita is hopeless cases, huh?
Right. Okay. So in the early 1920s, there was a group of nuns who were conned into buying this piece of land in Texas that they were promised was going to yield oil. So that would be their income. Well, it was a bust. There was absolutely no sign of oil in the ground, and the sisters knew they had been conned into a terrible investment. So they started praying to St. Rita because St. Rita takes on cases that are nearly impossible. So they prayed and prayed and prayed. Well, what do you know? Oil burst forth from the land. So these workers came on to help them with this oil rig and to help, you know, draw out the oil. And they built a little baseball diamond on the land so that they could kill time while in between shifts and all that kind of stuff. And so some of those players went on to become big leaguers. Mm. And that is the story of how St. Rita became, you know, was associated with that oil rig. In fact, the movie The Rookie, which stars Dennis Quaid, kind of opens with that story and how he had heard the story and he went back and started playing on that field near that oil rig. And he became a late entry.
That was a miracle.
That was a miracle,
I mean, the pitcher, Jim Morris.
Yeah, that was... whom the story is about.
Yeah,
so he was inspired by St. Rita, and also probably she gave him a little boost into his career.
Wow.
So it is,
cool.
You know, the sport is just abounding with great miracle stories. Okay, you know, the other thing that baseball is really known for is its really colorful language. You know, it has given us some of the great idioms for our English language. Things like, oh, you're in the big leagues, or you got to cover your bases. He just threw me a curveball. I mean, think of all these things.
You want to play hardball?
Yeah, exactly.
And all the nicknames, too.
Yeah. Oh, you're going to knock this one out of the park, Jimmy G.
Shoeless Joe.
Yeah. So it's fun. The language is really fun. So I want to have a little fun with you here. Tom from Dallas, Texas is on the line with us. Hey, Tom, welcome to Call Me Catholic.
Hello, Father and Debbie, is it?
It's Peggy.
Craig. Oh, sorry, Craig. First time I heard your show, but I've got an analogy that I think is helpful for husbands to understand in their vocation when they are trying. I'm a father of 14 children.
Oh, God bless you.
Yeah, and so in my lifetime, I've had plenty of challenges providing and doing my job. But one day, I had a little falling out with my wife, and in that, I had to try to figure out how to understand my role better. And the analogy of baseball pitchers came to mind. And here's what the analogy is that pitchers grow up, you know, learning the game, boys learning to be men. And then they, at some point, if they're fortunate, they get into the big leagues. And when they're a young rookie pitcher, they can't even do anything wrong, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody loves them. They're great at the game. As they get older, and likewise in marriage, they start competing with the younger guys.
Mm-hmm.
And in marriage, men compete with their younger self.
Okay.
And what pitchers have to do is they have to find another pitch to be competitive. In other words, they have to work at the game to figure out how to compete with the young guy. So they have to work at the game as a husband on how to compete with the young guy they were when they got married. And that helped me, and friends of mine I've shared this with, it helps them realize how our challenge as husbands is an ongoing baseball game, learning new pitches to deal with the game. I just had to share that with
you. I like that.
Yeah.
It's quite an inspired thing, and I got,
Yeah.
Well, Tom, what was the new pitch you developed? Does it have a name?
Actually, quite honestly, to be honest, loving my wife, to be honest.
Okay.
That was what it was.
Well, that's like a
fastball.
That's a
split-finger knuckle curveball.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because as husbands, we get to be very cavalier and sure of ourselves, and we forget, honestly, how to love our wives, and that's...
That's a good pitch right there, I got to tell you.
Strike three.
Yeah.
You know what, Tom? And you've illustrated actually what we're trying to say, which is sometimes we look outside of our faith to find metaphors for living better.
And you see this in St. Go ahead, Tom.
Well, no, I was just going to say that was exactly right. So when I share it with other friends of mine, Catholic or not, it quickly helps them realize that's who they're competing against. Because us men typically look at our wives, I've said this unfortunately and shamefully, well, maybe you'll be happy with some other husband, and I'll move on. You know, that thing, and it's a regretful thing I said, but I realized in that statement, she is happy with a different man, and that was me.
Yeah.
So I needed to improve my game and be a better husband.
Yeah,
so,
and this whole thing of making analogies from sports is found in Scripture. You know, you have St. Paul. You see, making an analogy between the spiritual life and running. You know, run so as to win.
Absolutely.
All the runners run in the race to get.
Right.
A crown,
a
crown that withers and fades, but we, one that does not wither and fade.
And fighting the good fight.
Fight the good fight.
Right.
I do not shadow box, you know.
St.
Paul, if anybody has a problem with this, they got a problem with St. Paul.
That's right.
Hey,
exactly.
Tom, you've given us a beautiful example and a great analogy with your marriage. And God bless you, and God bless those 14 children and your wife.
Thank you very much.
Enjoy the season. So before we get to our baseball terminology, our little game here, Jimmy G is going to tell us a little bit about the EWTN media missionaries.
That's right. You know, in the Gospel of Mark, chapter 16, verse 15, it says, "Go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature." Well, we've all heard that scripture proclaimed many, many times. Well, one awesome way that you can go about doing that is by becoming an EWTN media missionary. EWTN's mission is to spread the eternal word and to teach others that Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. And as a media missionary, your task is to prayerfully take EWTN to your parish and community through the print and electronic media that they will provide to you. And some of the best areas where you can help are parish involvement, sharing EWTN with your parish. They'll give you the tools to make a difference. Public outreach, evangelize from your community to the world to learn how. It is doable. And also personal prayer. Prayer is essential to the work of every media missionary in spreading the gospel. So if this piques your interest, simply head on over to EWTNmissionaries.com, EWTNmissionaries.com.
Well, it's a lot of fun to be a media missionary, too. You kind of become part of the EWTN family without all the other responsibilities.
Exactly. That's right.
No, welcome to the family. So come on board the media missionary boat and join our family. Hey, so now we're going to return to the subject of baseball, and we're going to quiz Father Allen on how deeply he can analogize baseball to the spirit of our faith, to the spirit and practice of our faith. So, and I'm really good at these kinds of games, but I'm going to give, and if he needs a little help, maybe you can help him, Jimmy G. So first I'm going to give you a term, Father Allen.
My friend, huh? I can phone a friend.
Yeah, he's your colleague on this one. Last time you guys were playing against each other.
Yeah, we were.
Okay, but so I'm going to give you a term, Father Allen, and you need to first tell our listeners what that term means
all
in
right.
baseball language,
okay.
and then sort of make it a metaphor for something. Okay.
Okay,
first one is force play.
Force play. Okay, force play is a play in which you get the lead runner out. So, for example, you have a man on first, grounded to second baseman. He throws it to the shortstop. They get a guy forced out at second base. Analogy, sometimes our actions badly influence others.
I was thinking, do I need to find the Jeopardy music?
That could help.
Okay. Well, okay, yeah. I was sort of going to take it in a different direction, that sometimes you get rid of the thing that's keeping you from advancing. You know, you kind of strike that out. That was this week,
except,
huh?
Because he's kind of your friend on first base.
Okay. Right. Showing my baseball ignorance. Okay, how about, let's see if you know what this one is.
Okay.
The invisible runner rule.
Oh, that goes back to Sandlot days, yeah, where you have Ghost Man. You know, like if you get like three of your friends playing and whatever. You don't have enough to support a team, so there's three guys on base, but you only have two runners. So you say, okay, Ghost Man on first. And you just play as if you pretend there's a good runner on there and you estimate what he would have done on the next play.
Now, why do they do that? I mean, in baseball.
This is like Sandlot pickup games that boys will do just because if they don't have enough friends to play a full team.
Okay.
They'll say, okay, well, just ghost runner on first. And so you do ghost. So you act like somebody's there.
Oh, okay.
So that's, I guess you would say that's like your, you know, the angels or the saints, you know, are all around us, even though we can't see them.
We can't see them. They're still in the game.
Yeah.
You know, there's a really cute little video going around. It's an actual somebody's home video. And I've seen it making the rounds. It's so precious. It's this little boy out in a field, and it looks like it's somewhere in Iowa. And he's got a tee ball thing teed up, right?
Uh-huh.
So he puts his ball, and he's just a little guy. He couldn't be more than 3 or 4 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a dog next to him. He puts a ball on the tee, kind of makeshift tee, and he whacks it. The dog runs after the ball, and the little boy runs away. He runs out of the camera lens, and then the dog takes a bite, and the dog runs back, and the boy tries to beat him to that little home base before the dog gets there. And he grabs the ball from the dog. He puts it on. He does it. It's just so cute because it's just so wholesome and it's so kind of American.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I had to just.
My brothers and I used to play with our dog. He would try to catch the balls that we're throwing. He would jump it up and trying to get it. So
yeah.
It's a really resourceful little boy there.
It was. I thought it was so cute. And you only saw the back of him. But what was really cute is he would go through the gyrations. He'd obviously watched a lot of games because he'd get a little bit of dirt and rub it on his hands like this. It was very cute. Okay. How about on-base percentage?
Okay, so that's the, as it says, the percentage of the times that you get on base successfully. generally. So that, I guess that just refers to in the spiritual life, just how frequently you perform virtuous actions. Do you, a high unbased percentage would point to you are a virtuous person.
Okay. Well, or how about during Lent, if we were to say, what's my, look at the end of the Lenten season and say, how well did I do with my resolutions?
Okay.
Okay. What percentage is, would that work?
Yeah, it would work.
Because I mean, I think at the end of Lent, we need to look back and say, what could I have done better?
Yeah.
No. And how successful
Saint
was
it? Ignatius of Loyola, he has a little, his examination of conscience method. He says at the end of the day, take a look and, how many times did you fail in your resolutions? How many times did you succeed? What's your percentage?
There you go.
I mean, you can't quantify everything in the spiritual life, but whatever, some things help.
But you can assess.
Don't you think you should assess?
Okay.
Well, one of the things about baseball too is you can be at the top of the game and you're still 70% of the time you're failing, right?
As far as batting average, sure.
So
sure.
There's a lot of
kind of discouraging.
There's a lot of failure.
Baseball, that's a very good point. Baseball. Yeah, it's a game of failure. I mean, the top hitters, as Jimmy G pointed out, in terms of batting average, if you're hitting 300, that's good. That means you're failing 70% of the time. If you're a good team, you're failing 40% of the time, which is way lower than the successful teams in other sports. Football teams may be failing 10% of the time. Oh. Basketball maybe 10 to 20% of the time. Baseball, you got to be used to failure if you're going to be a baseball player.
You work
player.
Through the failure.
Yeah.
There's always
it's like life like that. Yeah. A lot more failures in baseball.
Oh, yeah.
There's always another at bat, right? Okay. How about the expression "retire the side"?
Oh man, that's okay. Getting three up and three down as a pitcher, that would be like just responding like completely victoriously to every temptation thrown again. I think of like Jesus in the temptation in the desert. He retired the side. The devil gave him three temptations.
I love it. See, this is good now. I like this. We're getting into the real scriptural stuff now.
We'll save this part of the tape.
Okay. How about a ground rule double?
Ground rule double. All right. So it's a ball bounces one way. Ball bounces and over the fence. It's not a homer, but it bounces out of the fence and out of play.
Okay. Now so wait. Explain that to me again, because I really don't actually know what a ground rule double is.
Okay. So typically, there's a few ways it could happen, but typically it's going to be a long fly ball but just misses being a home run, but then it bounces on the ground and then bounces out of the park. So it bounces over the fence.
Okay, so you can only go to second base.
Yeah, it's not a home run. You only go to second. Okay. So a ground rule double in the spiritual life would be like,
what about, I'm going to give you one and you see if you can come out with another one. What about someone who prays for a vocation, maybe enters the seminary and then realizes, even though the seminary was a very fulfilling, rich experience, that isn't exactly what he's being called to do.
That could work. That's one
comparison.
Analogy.
Yeah, that's a ground rule double.
One analogy. That's a ground rule double.
Apologies to the seminaries out there.
He thought he was going to hit a home run, but it bounced.
Yeah, or maybe you're trying to do something perfectly. You want to perform a perfect act of charity or whatever kind of virtue, and you do it, and it's good, but not quite as perfectly as you want it. Ground rule double.
Okay.
Take second base.
It's not
going to
get
good.
We're not going to get it
in the catechism that way.
Things.
I know. I like that. This is really fun, though. Okay, so what about a sacrifice fly?
Oh, no. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. Okay, sacrifice fly. Obviously, so what it is you have a man on third, less than two outs, and, your team tells you just get a run in. Coach tells you that, and you say, okay, fine. I'm just going to hit an easy fly ball. Make sure I get a fly ball that's deep enough that's going to allow the man from third to tag up home to get the run in. So I'm giving up myself as an out for the sake of this guy scoring, for the sake of the team. And so, that I think just the very term sacrifice, the analogy, sometimes you need to make sacrifices of things that you might want for your own good for the sake of the common good. Mm-hmm. So giving up, it could be anything, giving up your time, giving up certain
taking one for the team.
Yeah, taking from the team. Giving up, sweets or fasting during Lent for the good of the team of the church and of the world.
Yeah, or giving up something that you might want to do so that you can take somebody to a doctor appointment.
Exactly, giving up that time, sort of time. And,
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, how about a checked swing?
A check swing. All right, a check swing is a half swing. So the batter started to swing, but then started to change his mind because he didn't think he would hit it. And he checked it, okay, and the ump rules, okay, he held back enough. You started to swing, but you held back. All right, my first guess would be that that's like when you're tempted to sin, but then at the last game, like, no, what am I doing? Stop.
Perfect. Check swing.
Check swing. I held back, Jesus. I held back.
And you don't have to take it to confession.
Right. I mean, there's no consent. Yeah, I was just on the cusp of giving consent.
Yeah, I held back. But you know what? That takes discipline. That takes control.
Right.
And that's almost
the temptation was there.
The hardest time to stop. Yeah, once you've got the momentum going. Yeah. Okay, so we only have a little bit time left. I'm going to give you a couple you can choose from. You can either do sitting on a pitch or goose egg.
Oh, a goose egg. Sitting on a pitch or a goose egg. Okay. Sitting on a pitch. Okay, so if you're a hitter, you're sitting on a pitch. You're usually up in the count, meaning that there's more balls than strikes in the count. So it's probably like 2-0 or 3-1. And you expect the pitcher to come with a certain kind of pitch, probably a fastball. And you're just sitting on it. And you're just expecting... You're
not going to deliver on that. You're waiting for the one you want.
You're waiting for the one you want, fastball. Yeah, so you can hit that well. So that's called sitting on a pitch. So I guess in the spiritual life, boy, I mean, maybe it's you relying on something that you do well in the spiritual life, or maybe some special devotion. You're just sitting on, you're in a time of trouble, but you're like, I'm sitting on tomorrow's mass. That's going to help out.
Okay.
Or today's rosary.
Or going through the litany of saints and thinking, no, not this one, not this, that one. That's
I'm
the
sitting,
saying
I'm
I want.
I'm sitting on Blessed James Kern because he helped out the
right.
comeback girl,
Amen.
Teresa.
Hey, we have had so much fun today with our baseball expert father, Alan Benander. Thank you so much for coming in. Can you give a really, really quick blessing?
Sure. Through the intercession of Blessed Virgin Mary, Mother of God, Saint Joseph, Holy Spouse, Saints Norbert, Augustine, Michael, and Blessed James Kern, and St. Cyril of Jerusalem, and all the angels and saints of God, may the blessing of Almighty God, the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit descend upon you all and remain with you forever, especially throughout this Lent. Amen.
God bless you. Until next week, I'm Peggy Normandin, but you can call me Catholic.
You've been listening to Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin, live from the Christ Cathedral campus in Garden Grove, California. Call Me Catholic is a co-production of EWTN Radio and Orange County Catholic Radio. Heard weekly on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.